Things at Democracy Now, Director of Finance and Operations, as well as a Development Director. Go to democracynow.org. I want to thank Mike Burke, Carla Wills, Laura Gottesdiener. I'm Amy Goodman with Juan Gonzalez. Thanks for joining us.
This is WHFR, Dearborn. Just sort of a moment of silence there, I guess, in respect for a lot of people who have passed this week and are no longer with us. We're still mourning the loss of Joanne Korczynska here, our blues music director. For over 20 years, she was a member of the station and hosting Highway 61 from 2 to 6 o'clock. She died on January 6th, and then there's some famous people, movie stars and music stars and so on that have passed. As Garrison Keillor, old-time radio person himself, who's supposedly retiring from a Prairie Home Companion this year, although he's retired in the past, after more than 40 years on the air, he said, "If I did eulogies, as I get older, I'd do nothing but eulogies." Because there's people dying all the time. Anyway, let's get started now with the new WHFR Journal for today, January 15th, 2016. Hello and welcome to another edition of the new WHFR Journal, local news and alternative views for Dearborn and the surrounding areas. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today on the Journal. All kinds of things always happening every week. A lot of it not covered in your local newspapers, I'm sorry to say. It's really hard. I was thinking this morning when I started the show, we had this kind of local public affairs talk show every week for almost all of our 31 years on the air here at WHFR. And I think I've been the host for most of that time. And I'm just realizing is that usually I just had to bring in the two Dearborn weekly newspapers that still exist, the Dearborn Press and Guide and the Dearborn Times Herald, and there'd be plenty of news, in-depth reporting, opinions, commentaries, letters to the editors. And now I didn't even bring the papers with me today because either we covered the stories already from other sources last week, and they're in the papers this week, but none of them have full-time reporters. Yeah, think about that. Nobody is looking to find the news and to write about it professionally and intelligently anymore for either of our two weekly papers. I know, and things have changed in terms of the economy, but they're not helping themselves by not having reporters and not doing a better job than what people can dig up on the internet themselves. Unfortunately, internet stories are often inaccurate, depending on their source, of course, and they're usually very slanted because each website has its own bias, not trying to necessarily be objective, if you will, balanced, if you will, because it's not as controversial to be balanced. That's a definite problem there. What can you say? So looking at some of the top stories of the week from other sources, from, for example, the Detroit Metro Times, which is the absolute best investigative reporting and most consistent investigative reporting newspaper in the Detroit area. I know they only have 6 or 7 or 8 stories, but add them up, that's usually more than the news, the free press, and your local papers. On their website, just this morning, here's a follow-up, and Democracy Now!, wasn't that an amazing show? I hope you listen to that on Fridays from 12 to 1 here, right before this show. Or I hope you just go to their website, democracynow.org, and listen at any time of the day or night. They have 5 new shows, one every week at 9 a.m. Eastern Time. There's also a video version if you want to see them in the studio as they're doing the radio, basically radio show. They're also, by the way, on at the iTunes store. You say, iTunes, that's an Apple Macintosh computer thing, isn't it? And I have a PC, and I don't like that Apple stuff. Remember, you can get iTunes for whatever kind of Windows operating system you have for free from Apple.com, and then you can get the free podcast that I'm talking about here from the iTunes store. And in this case, I'm recommending, first of all, Democracy Now!, okay, although you can, again, download the file after it's broadcast every day from their website, democracynow.org. And it's essential listening because the kind of news they do is not covered on most other TV stations. Not because it's not fair and balanced. It is, but it's information about people and issues that the major media has. And I'll have to, you know, I usually don't quote, of course, the former vice presidential Republican candidate, Sarah Palin, but lamestream media. You know, she called them lamestream media because she felt they were too liberal. I say they're lamestream media because they're too biased, either conservative or liberal, and they miss a lot of stories, both of them, because they're not commercially valid. They're not sensational enough. Things like hunger in America. People are starving all the time. What about health problems? People have health problems all the time because of our crazy health care system and crazy health insurance system. I can go on and on. But anyway, from the Metro Times this morning, this is a follow-up. You may hear about it later today. Maybe not. But, you know, there was a big protest in person in Lansing yesterday, and they talked about it on Democracy Now! Because, again, that Democracy Now! Show you just heard was done live this morning from 9 a.m. to 10 a.m. So it's only 3 hours old since it ended. And they covered Lansing. And they covered the not only Flint water problem, but the problem with schools in Detroit. So here's the follow-up. It's a little bit newer than Democracy Now! That I found. And this is from the Metro Times. So it's not, you say, well, Metro Times comes out once a week on Wednesdays. So that's got to be old news. Yeah, but they're keeping their website up to date now, daily. So here's the story that was just posted at 12:45 this morning. Okay, 12:45 a.m. While much of America was watching a GOP debate Thursday night, you were watching, right? This is Ali Gross who wrote this story. Governor Rick Snyder requested that President Obama declare Flint a federal emergency major disaster. According to a press release blasted out by the self-declared tough nerd, that's what the governor called himself, at 11:32 p.m. last night on Twitter, because, of course, you always release your press releases on Twitter, right? Not to the lamestream media. No. The request aims to get, quote, supplementary federal aid in the form of individual assistance and public assistance to help eligible residents and state and local government entities to protect the health, safety, and welfare of Flint residents, unquote. It goes on to explain that, quote, if federal aid is granted, assistance can include grants for temporary housing and home repairs, low-cost loans to cover uninsured property losses, and other programs to help people and businesses recover. Public assistance helps cover some of the costs incurred by the state and local governments due to damage to public facilities and infrastructures, such as city schools and the water system. Of course, this request will be reviewed by the Federal Emergency Management Agency, also known as FEMA, who can assess how much aid should be allocated to Flint and make recommendations to President Obama. Now, again, he didn't do this until there was the huge rally, and huge, a couple hundred people, I understand, in front of the Capitol building, all this time, there's been other rallies on the Flint water issue and the Detroit schools issues in the last couple of weeks, but now the protesters are requesting that Snyder resign as governor. He knew about this. His administrators knew about it. They did very little, if nothing. If they needed emergency financial help, they should have asked for it before. Of course, what? The state doesn't have any money? This is not like a hurricane or a tornado hit. It took like 2-3 weeks to ask for this. And it took a rally of people asking for your resignation there. I know yesterday I signed a petition saying he should resign because I feel he should. For quite a few reasons. I've got a list of reasons. And, you know, he can't run again for office. So you say, well, who cares? He's term limited. Someone else will run for governor. And I suspect it might be our Attorney General, Bill Schuette. Why? Because, he got publicity late yesterday because he said he's going to investigate that Flint water crisis thing. And if any laws were broken, well, is stupidity against the law? Is idiocy against the law? I don't think so. Or there'd be an awful lot of people in prison. We talk about overloaded prisons now, huh? And so I don't think it's going anywhere, but he looks like, I'm going to find out and prosecute who's ever guilty here. Well, he won't find anybody. That's my prediction. We're still in January. We can do predictions and resolutions and all that, right? So the Metro Times continues. Snyder said, quote, we are utilizing this tweet last night, utilizing all state resources. Well, that's crazy. What resources? To ensure Flint residents have access to clean and safe drinking water, and today I'm asking President Obama to provide additional resources as our recovery efforts continue. It's only 35 square miles. What do they have, 30,000 residents? It's about, the city has dwindled to about, smaller than Dearborn, certainly. I know, it's all poor people. Why don't they get a job? I'm being very satirical here, but I've actually heard that. I've read that in the crazy comments, that people put on the internet, which I shouldn't read, because it only boils my blood even more. And we should try to stay calm and be rational, as President Obama suggested in his State of the Union address, and work together. Now, why the state of Michigan hasn't jumped in is because the legislature doesn't want to give up any money. They don't want to direct any funds to help, number one, apparently, Detroit schools. And by the way, Governor Snyder has a new proposal now to help the Detroit schools because the other one wasn't getting through the legislature. His own Republicans didn't want to go that route. So I'll tell you about that, too. Again, breaking news today, which you may hear on the lamestream media later today. So, also, the governor's request follows yesterday's public health announcement that you may have heard that Flint has seen an uptick, that sounds like a disease in itself, in Legionnaires' disease cases, and this may be a result of the switch water supply. However, some experts have testified in other sources I read today is that the Legionnaires' disease problems crested about a year ago. So that's, but this is one argument they're making for federal funds is that they have to fight Legionnaires' disease, but it's not getting worse. There's a decline, in fact. So that was a problem. Did anybody do anything about it a year ago? No. So a little late on all these things. And in fact, it said that there was 87 Genesee County, that includes Flint, residents with Legionnaires' disease between June 2014 and November 2015. A little over a year there. In the 4 years prior, there was only 6 to 13 cases. So they think that the Legionnaires' disease might have come one contributing factor. Certainly, it's logical because it happened around the same time. The dirty water coming from the Flint River somehow also either let it happen or made it worse in that 17-month period. So that was the big tweet from the governor last night. I assume he sent a formal letter in writing to FEMA requesting the disaster aid, because why should the state of Michigan have to pay for it? Just because it looks like it was the state's fault because they did nothing promptly to help the people of Flint. whether it was Legionnaire's disease now that we discover, or bad water that gives you lower IQ as the kids grow up. Oh yeah, enough lead and you could die, but it's not that high a percentage, but it's still harmful to your health. Any amount of additional lead in the water is harmful to your health long term, and Flint is in bad shape. Not okay, of course. I know. So what else do we have here about that? Where was the comment? Okay, one story about pollution, air pollution, that I didn't do last week that I meant to do, but it was new last Thursday. And this is actually from the News Herald, which is a printed paper weekly in Downriver area. And I think there was a mention of the same story in either the Pressing Guide or the Times Herald also this week. And those are the papers I didn't bring with me because I knew I had this story. So from Jessica Strachan, this was a report last Thursday. You may have heard about it, of course, on TV news. But concerns about Marathon Detroit refineries request to increase emissions in an already polluted urban area near the Rouge River drew hundreds of area residents to a public hearing a week ago Wednesday. Okay. Last week Wednesday evening at River Rouge High School. Now, if approved, if these higher standards for emissions approved by the MDEQ, under new management now with a new spokesperson, of course, because the other ones quit, resigned under pressure because of the Flint water crisis. Anyway, if approved by the MDEQ, who's ever in charge now, the increase would release 8 pollutants, including nitrogen, carbon monoxide, sulfuric acid, mist, and sulfur dioxide into the area surrounding the refinery at 1300 South 4th Street near the downriver communities of River Rouge and Melvindale. 37-year-old resident said, Zakia Knighton, said, "It's really sad when business is so big that lives become small. I know we live in an industrial town and we know the risks, but at the same time, I'd like to think the government wouldn't just sell us out like that and not safeguard our health." Unquote. The MDEQ scheduled the hearing as part of its process to either approve, change, or deny the refinery's permit requests. And Lynn Fiedler, who is MDEQ's Air Quality Division Chief, will make the final decision all by herself. "We are concerned about public health, and we are reviewing this very carefully. With the new requirements from the U.S. Environmental Protection Agency, all refineries are going to have to make a better product and address those emissions somehow." And so we'll see how that goes. But I can't imagine that we need more refined gasoline, and they got to do it more cheaply by putting more toxic gases and sulfuric acid mists into the air in that area. Can't believe that. Don't want it to happen that way. But, you know, let somebody know. Okay, just finishing up this segment, I'll mention the other update. Governor Snyder, in regard to the Detroit Public Schools, yesterday he introduced a new proposal. Because Detroit Public Schools are $1 billion+ in debt. Too bad they couldn't buy a Powerball ticket, huh, and win that. Anyway, the centerpiece of the effort, the new effort by Governor Snyder, hoping to get it through the legislature, is repaying $715 million that's owed by the Detroit Public Schools in multiple successive emergency finance loans approved and essentially co-signed by the state. Unlike the original Snyder proposal announced last spring, the new version does not appear to erode the opportunities now available to Detroit parents to choose a school that best fits their children's needs. But the bill also doesn't identify the source of the millions of dollars the governor has said are needed to bail out DPS. Where are you going to get $715 million from? Said Buddy Morehouse, spokesman for the Michigan Association of Public School Academies. Morehouse said that his group, the industry group for public charter schools in the state, reviewed a draft of the upcoming bill on Wednesday. Snyder's earlier plan would have given a school czar in Detroit the power to close charter schools and restrict the entities permitted to authorize new ones. The updated version does call for an appointed CEO, but without the power to restrict and close charters. Charter school advocates feared the consequences of giving a political appointee the power to close schools. That's because Detroit is a heavily Democratic city, and the party in Michigan has been hostile to charter schools, Democratic Party, which largely have non-union workforces. And, excuse me, I mean, this is a slanted story, biased story coming from Michigan Capital Connection, actually the Mackinac Center for Public Policy, which is, everybody knows, they're a conservative think tank. They only think conservative. And then they try to back it up with facts, which is a ridiculous kind of think tank where you're not thinking. You're blocking your mind from all the information so you can present what looks like a rational case for only one side of the facts. And there's always many sides, in fact, let me say. So we'll see how that goes. Of course, where is that $750 million going to come from, even if the legislature likes it now, because, it doesn't get rid of any of their favorite little entities, the charter schools. And, of course, charter schools always are hurting public schools, okay? And they're primarily populated by the people who can get their kids to them, which means the rich people, or the people that have some additional money that can afford to get their kids to a charter school in Detroit. So they're always leeching on, and that's my opinion. Remember, all opinions on this show, the new WHFR Journal, as we say every week, at least one time during the hour, are not necessarily those opinions of anyone here at Henry Ford College, faculty, staff, students, administrators, or our board of trustees. But just challenging your mind and your thinking here, charter schools do not have a proven record of success anywhere. Okay, they're not, on majority, better than public schools. But if you keep underfunding and cutting the budgets and making life more difficult for public schools, they will decline. And that's what's been happening. I was educated in a public school system that I thought was pretty good, really good. I went to a public university that I thought was pretty good. I had my choice of public universities, though, but still. I picked one. But my local public schools in Flat Rock, Michigan, not known as the best in the world necessarily, were very good. A lot of options. Of course, that was back in the 60s when they actually had some funding from the state. And the teachers had high morale. And we got the best teachers because we paid good, secure salaries and had good health benefits and good pension benefits. We don't have that anymore. Teachers are never the best paid occupation. Never. You know, in some countries they are. Like in Russia? Yeah. In Norway and Sweden? Yes. Highest paid public school teachers. Think about it. I know it doesn't help Russia very much, but, you know, education should be the number one game in the country. It is a game. You know, we got to work hard at it. We've got to get everything in place. We've got to play hard, but play fair. And it's not the way in America. So if I am getting angry, I'm not channeling my Donald Trump at all here. I just know after 48 years at Henry Ford College, formerly Henry Ford Community College, I've seen all of these trends, and they're not good trends. I've seen them in the public schools where my daughter has gone to school, and she's a public school teacher too now, as regular listeners know. I talk about her almost every show because she's my in to a good channel of current information every week. So good luck to Governor Snyder. I mean, something's got to be done to help the city of Detroit. As you know, there's all those sick outs and the teachers aren't showing up. That's right. And why? Working conditions are so bad. Oh, sure, they've lost benefits and money and pay and, you know, yeah, all of that. And they can be fired at any time for no reason if the principal says so. No reason. And they have no legal recourse because their unions have the power of the unions have been chopped down to nothing, almost. And you know, I understand why they're frustrated and demoralized, but also their schools are falling apart. There's mushrooms growing out of the wood panels on the floors in some of the schools. Okay, there's mold. And Superintendent Brian Whiston was on Detroit Today on WDET Radio this morning in a live, I think it was a live interview. Actually, he said something that sounded like they recorded it yesterday, actually, because he referred to, well, Friday I'm going to go, and it is Friday, Brian. So it might have been recorded yesterday, but he said, gee, I wish the teachers wouldn't have gone on strike first. I wish they would have sent me the pictures of the problem, and then I could have come down and investigated. Apparently he is coming down today to look at the situation himself. But realize, all due respect to Brian Whiston, the Michigan State Board of Education can't do anything directly. They don't control any money. They're just sort of advisory to the state legislature. And even the legislature has set up that other little agency called the EAA to help seriously challenge districts. And then the governor has set up emergency financial managers, which take other powers away from even the hope of influence by the Michigan Board of Education. So good luck, Brian. I said that before. When you took the job, you knew that you couldn't really do much, except you're a figurehead. And now you're telling the teachers they should have started by tweeting you, which is apparently what they started doing yesterday when they got the word they were supposed to tweet pictures. I didn't know you could tweet pictures. I thought that was only 140 characters, however many words that is. And I didn't know you could attach pictures. But what do I know? I think that's a crazy way to communicate. Yes, I guess they could have made a phone call to his office, but I think they know that he can't do anything. The State Board of Ed can't do anything, get a little bit of publicity for them, but they can't actively do anything. And of course, the fourth or the fifth financial manager appointed by the state of Michigan to Detroit, they can't do really anything to help because they don't believe they have any money. And of course, the legislature won't give the district any money to pay any of the bills. It's a very bad situation all around. So am I in favor of changing state government? Yes, but it's not just the governor. Actually, he's had a few initiatives, not many, that I approved of. Whereas the state legislature, the majority of them Republicans, so the majority of the legislature, has had nothing but negative suggestions and done nothing, which is a negative situation too. All right. So that's the updates I have on that. Let me do some public service announcements in my own inimitable way. Coming up, let's get these dates in order here. Big Band Poppin' Boppin' Pop Concert. Bop and Pop. So take Pop to the Bop and Big Band concert. And Mom, too. Okay. It's going to be a big night at the Michael A. Guido Theater, and this is going to be January 30th, Saturday, January 30th, 2 weeks from tomorrow, at 8 p.m., a big night out, and it's in the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center, and that is not here at Henry Ford College. Okay. Just so you know, because everybody's like, oh, and the Performing Arts Center, and it's Henry Ford Big Band. And just so you know, it is not the Henry Ford main campus. It is the one there on Michigan Avenue, the so-called Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. HFC will present this concert with special patron sponsorship by the Rotarians of the Rotary Club of Michigan. Why? Because probably the city of Dearborn wanted to charge them money, even though it's a nonprofit group. So somebody had to pony up the rental fee, I'm sure. Because everybody's, you know, got a tight budget these days. What you'll see on the 30th is award-winning members performing in this concert, such as young professional musicians, music educators, and traditional-aged music students. Tradition-aged music students? Who enroll in HFC to continue their performance opportunities. The HSC Director of Bands and the Director of the Rotary Concert Chair. And the Rotary Concert Chair is Rick L. Goward from Henry Ford College. And we hope to have him on the show in the near future. I invited him, anyway, to talk about this. College scholarships are awarded to deserving students in an important commitment made annually by the Rotarians. And so we do thank the Rotary for doing that. This year, awards from $1,500 to $5,000 will go to approximately 20 students currently attending the Dearborn Public Schools to further their music education. Thank you, Dearborn Rotary. Individual tickets to the Big Band Bop and Pop concert are $20 each. Those wishing to be on the patron list in the Big Band Pop and Bop program must make a monetary contribution of $100 or more, but I hope everybody can get over there and see them. Also, tickets, by the way, if you want to purchase in advance, are available by calling 313-943-2354. If you're not listening to the podcast and you can't rewind the file quick, I'll say it again, 313-943-2354. And if you want discount prices by buying four or more tickets, you can contact Rick Goward directly, R. Goward, that's R-G-O-W-A-R-D, at hfcc.edu. So that's Saturday, the 30th. What's the next one I've got here? Friday, February the 5th, during the day, we're going to have our annual Women's Recognition Luncheon. And that's going to start at 11 a.m. There's going to be raffles. Tickets are $3 each. At noon on Friday, February 5th, there's going to be a program, speakers, and lunch. And they are going to give awards to significant women in business and education in the Dearborn area, business, arts, and education, too. Now, so tickets are $35 a person, but $19 is tax deductible. So there you go. If you've got the wherewithal to be able to deduct anything, just save your receipts. You need to RSVP by Friday, January 29th, which is 2 weeks from today. So the February 5th is, what, 3 weeks from today? You can also online and donate at foundation.hfcc.edu/donate. And that's the Women Recognitions Luncheon right here in the Student Center and the main campus of Henry Ford College. And the money does go to benefit the Student Outreach and Support Services and the Student Emergency Fund here at Henry Ford College. So it's a very good cause, and it's a great, important symbol of recognition to the talented women and the dedicated women in the community. But later in the evening, on February 5th, Brassima Taz, Rich Ridenour, Pops Concert and Pianist. This is going to be, I think, with the Dearborn Symphony Orchestra, but it's going to feature Brandon Ridenour on trumpet. So pianist Rich Ridenour and his son Brandon on trumpet, veteran of the famed Canadian brass, perform such hits as Bugler's Holiday, Williams' Olympic Fanfare, Billy Joel's Piano Man, a Beatles tribute, and many more. And that will be, of course, at the Ford Community and Performing Arts Center. And ticket information goes through DearbornSymphony.org, DearbornSymphony.org. That should be a lot of fun. And one thing that they mentioned also on this email from the Dearborn Symphony is that before that, on Friday, the week before, on Friday, January 29th, Polkas and Punschki. It's at O'Kelly's Banquet Hall on Park Street. That'll be Friday night, January 29th, from 6:30 until 11 p.m. The live band is the Polish Dukes and Polish Dancers, but that, again, it's $49 a person, but apparently because checks are payable and mailed to the Friends of the Dearborn Symphony, it's a fundraiser for the Dearborn Symphony. And so have your polkas and punschki early. Is it early this year? Yeah, I think it's early from the usual time. But anyway, fun for those people who get into that. All right. And a few mentions about things coming up, like talk shows. Duh. We don't just have the new WHFR Journal on Fridays from 1 to 2 o'clock. Nope. On the station Making Waves, WHFR.FM, we also have Tuesday talk shows. And there's always one noon to 1 p.m. called the Big Picture Science. And that comes to us through National Public Radio from the SETI Institute, Search for Extraterrestrial Intelligence. But they're big on science and astronomy and that. And two of their great, Seth Shostak is a astronomer for them, as well as the host, along with Molly Bentley, for this show. And it's a great, entertaining show about science. And coming up this Tuesday, January 19th, the show's entitled Apt to Adapt. Humans are challenging their environment faster than their genes can keep pace. This has led to a slew of diseases from backache to diabetes, says one evolutionary biologist, and our technology may not get us out of the climate mess we've created. So just how good are we at adapting to the world around us? That's going to be from noon to 1 o'clock. And there again, you're into those computer-type things. You can listen to every episode of Big Picture Science yourself for free from their own website, SETI.org. SETI.org. But also, if you got that iTunes store, iTunes music app on your PC or Mac, go to the podcast section of the iTunes store or just type in Big Picture Science. You can get it for free every week yourself. The free download. Or you can listen online. I think you can, maybe not. You have to download it first from iTunes store. And then from 1 to 2 o'clock every Tuesday, we have what's called the Tuesday Forum. It's locally produced, locally hosted talk shows on specific issues, a different theme, if you will, within a general area each week. This coming Tuesday, it is the third Tuesday of the month, is a show, Metaphysically Speaking, hosted by Mike Holloway from our WHFR staff, in-depth interview with a local professional in one area of the metaphysical arts. That's always challenging. And he is non-judgmental, you know? I mean, he's just digging for the information to find out if, you know, what's going on in an area of, I don't know, could be prophecy, could be health-related. It's definitely usually alternative ideas, because that's what WHFR is all about. And nothing wrong with having the widest range of ideas. And if you know enough about them, you can either accept them or reject them. Yeah, your choice. Coming up, and I'll just go jump to next Thursday, we also have talk shows from National Public Radio that we feature, and we especially like the TED Radio Hour from National Public Radio. That's from 2 to 3 p.m. every Thursday. Coming up this coming Thursday is a show on courage. So it's selections from technology, entertainment, design, TED conferences held worldwide every month, and they take all these different speeches and put them into a single show on the same topic with additional interviews with the speakers, as well as parts of their speech. So it's the best of the best. Courage. What does it mean to be courageous? Is it an automatic response or a conscious choice? In this hour, TED speakers examine the nature of courage and what it takes to risk everything to do the right thing. Governor Snyder. Oh, no, that's not there. I'm sorry. So it's a TED Radio Hour on WHFR every Thursdays from 2 to 3. And yes, you can download that too from the iTunes Radio Music Store if you choose to listen to it that way. From 3 to 4, Philosophy Talk, which is from Stanford University via NPR. Dignity denied, life and death in prison. According to the Treatment Advocacy Center, there are more people living with mental illness in prisons than in psychiatric hospitals across the country. Despite the fact that prisoners can have significant medical needs, healthcare services are often woefully inadequate, which can turn a minor sentence into a death sentence. And for those dying in prison, few receive any hospice or palliative care. So what kinds of patients' rights should prisoners have? John Perry and Ken Taylor maintain their dignity with filmmaker Edward Barons, director of the movie or documentary Prison Terminal, The Last Days of Private Jack Hall. That's on Philosophy Talk from 3 to 4 o'clock next week, Thursday. Mm-hmm. Yep. Don't forget to tune in to Kitty Love and Highway 61 Blues starting at 2 p.m. today. Look forward to that. The best in the blues. And she's got some new stuff she's going to be talking about and featuring a lot of different things like we do always here on all of our music shows. From 2 o'clock to 6 o'clock today. Oh, my goodness. By the way, that Metaphysically Speaking show on the Tuesday Forum, we always archive that on our website, whfr.fm, along with this show, the new WHFR Journal. So if you just go to our homepage, whfr.fm, you click on Talk Shows, and you got your choice of either the Journal or the Tuesday Forum. And then when you click on those, just choose the date you're interested in, like the most recent date, if you will. And that's always archived. As soon as the show is done broadcasting, it will be in the podcast archive for a couple of months, in fact. So you can catch up if you miss a week or two of, but only the Tuesday Forum and the new WHFR Journal. At this point, we can't afford to pay the royalties to archive these other shows or any of our music shows, by the way. We've got requests that, hey, that was a great music show. Can I listen to it again somewhere, somehow? No, you can't. We don't have the budget to pay the royalties on archive shows, but we're investigating. We're trying to get dispensation for being a very low-budget, low-power, non-commercial public station. But so far, we haven't been able to make that jump. But I've given you the other places you can listen to these other shows for free. So talk and information shows on the internet are a great thing, really. You should find them and enjoy them all you can. Okay. You're listening to the new WHFR Journal. My name is Jay Koronek. Happy to be with you today. And my usual colleague, John Conroy, has the day off today. I hope you can get back next Friday. Next Friday is our auto show. That's right. The Detroit Auto Show, as I continue to call it. Old-timers continue to call it the Detroit Auto Show, which is now the North American International Auto Show, and has been for years, but I refuse to use that name when I talk about it in general. A couple things I want to say is I hope to get down there next week sometime, so you'll have my personal report, always exciting every year, about the auto show. And it does start this Saturday and continues on through the week. It's a little pricey. Maybe you can get discount tickets somewhere. In the past, I know Kroger's grocery stores, their customer service desk, they had discount tickets if you buy them in advance. Otherwise, it's $13 a person or $7 a person down there in person for seniors. Is that 62 or 65? I'm not sure, but I think 65. And kids are $7 a person. Kind of interesting. There's fewer auto manufacturers that are down there this year. Not a lot fewer. They said, it allows a little more space for the other car makers to spread out. Okay. But one of my favorite automobiles, the Minis, made by BMW, sometimes also referred to as Mini Cooper, since they're all Mini Coopers, or Mini Cooper S, the sportier version. Mini won't be down there. Also, Jaguar Land Rover won't be down there. But a three-wheeled car, well, technically it's a motorcycle, called the Elio. Why did they call it Elio, E-L-I-O? Because the man behind its last name is Elio. I don't know, it's Jack or Paul or John Elio, whatever. But they're going to have a display. Apparently it's not on the main floor. They have a lot of displays, if you go to the auto show, on the lower level. So you have to go to the south end of Cobo Center. They don't call it Cobo Hall anymore. And go to the south end, go down the elevator, and keep your ID, ticket, whatever, handy, your hand stamp. And there's a whole floor of special exhibits downstairs. So don't miss that if you do go down there, because you are paying a lot of money per person to get in. So you might as well get the biggest benefit you can. And hope you have fun. I mean, I never can find a place to park, which is ironic for the auto show. And parking costs more sometimes than the admission price for one person. So maybe you ought to carpool down there, so you only have to park once. And of course, you usually have to walk blocks and blocks in the freezing cold, although maybe it'll be a little warmer this weekend, at least into the 40s. So if you want to go, it's always fun for me because my dad worked at Chrysler Corporation on the line, as they say, for more than 40 years. Didn't enjoy it, but it was a way to have money to keep his family going, of course. And he suffered for that, I'm sorry to say. But nonetheless, you know, it is fun. It is a Detroit thing. And Detroit auto manufacturers are still a big deal in the world, even though Chrysler is now owned by Fiat. Yeah. Okay. In fact, I believe the name is now the FCA, technically. Fiat Chrysler of America, something like that. So, yep. That'll be our show exclusively next week, and hopefully that will be tons of fun, at least for me, and I'm trying to get a few automotive reporters to join us on the air to make their comments. They're pretty busy this week covering basically it's the industry show. Through today, there's still some press conferences just for the reporters. I don't have anything confirmed, but I'm sure I will for next week. So don't miss WHFR Journal's Auto Show Show. Okay. Let's see here. Someone I greatly respect as a broadcaster, he does a radio show once a week for an hour, and he does a nightly public television show, talk show. His name is Tavis Smiley. And in fact, the Tavis Smiley radio show used to be 5 days a week for an hour, and it used to be carried, and this is probably 8-10 years ago now, by WDET. Who unfortunately got, even though it's primarily African-American news and issues, yes, it is, but, you know, Detroit has a few African-Americans, and the area does have, you know, that population, and, you know, everybody's problems are the problems of all of us, I feel, and especially if it's a majority problem, His show was too controversial, I guess. This week, he got into a little bit of a tiff, I see, with Donald Trump. He, in a longer comment that I don't have in front of me, did say that Trump was a racial arsonist, because Tavis Smiley has a way with words. He's very eloquent. He does know how to communicate intelligently. Racial arsonist, which means he's starting fires using race as the approach to it. He's a bigot, I can say that, that's what Tavis was directly suggesting, but he did it in a classier way. Well, now it seems that Donald Trump, he had to tweet, because that's what people do, they tweet. They don't issue press releases and say anything in depth. And so Trump's tweet was, why does this week ABC, which was the show that Tavis was on when he made the comment, with George Stephanopoulos, allow a hater and racist like Tavis Smiley to waste good airtime. ABC can do much better than him. I completely disagree. Tavis is a brilliant journalist, a brilliant researcher. Every year at this time, for the last couple of years, I get out his book, Death of a King, which is the real story of Dr. Martin Luther King Jr.'s final year. Came out more than a year ago, and I read it last year myself, and I have it with me today to reread. It's brilliantly written about the last year in Martin Luther King's career before he was assassinated, and that was a very important year. So two things. First of all, WHFR is going to have a few specials commemorating on the official holiday of Martin Luther King, his birthday, which, by the way, is the 15th today. If he was allowed to celebrate it, of course. But we celebrate these things as a national holiday now, always the Monday closest to the birth date. So it's always on a Monday. So it'll be celebrated this Monday. And on Monday, starting at 3 o'clock, WHFR will have a special, some special Martin Luther King shows for you with some elements from National Public Radio that are available to us, but also I think some comments from some of our own staff will be in there. Very significant person in the history of the world in terms of civil rights for all people as well as peace in the world, nonviolence in general, one of the great nonviolent historical figures in the world, too. Right up there in my book with Gandhi and Tolstoy and all the other people that were trying to stop war, stop violence everywhere. Because it doesn't resolve issues. It causes more problems. And as you know, if you listen to the show, my own background, I am a practicing pacifist. That doesn't mean I won't defend myself, but I do not believe that violence is an effective answer for anything. And I've read many approaches, especially Gandhi's, Mahatma Gandhi's writings on civil disobedience. Well, Henry David Thoreau, too, in his essay on that. But Gandhi's Satyagraha, which is the concept of truth force, being stronger than guns and weapons. And remember, it was Gandhi that, okay, it took him 20-some years, but he organized India to kick out the British. And it was mostly nonviolent. But the British weren't. But nonetheless, he freed the country through nonviolence, mostly. Can't control everybody. So here's what Trump said about Tavis Smiley. I called him a racist. And what Smiley said in response, and by the way, Tavis Smiley has a new book that he has updated called The Covenant with Black America 10 Years Later, and he's been giving these interviews about it. And the simple fact is the statistics show things are not getting better for African Americans 10 years later. The big covenant with Black America to improve lives and justice and so on, things are getting worse for them. It's too bad that all the facts point that way. But hey, Trump isn't saying that America is too well off anyway, but I guess if he disagrees with Tavis, he's saying Tavis is wrong, that African Americans have got a great thing going for them. It's just everything else about America is bad. Well, that's just totally crazy. And Tavis, you know, at length in the book has got the facts. Read it, make your own conclusions. But Tavis Smiley responded to Trump's attack on CNN late this last Monday night, and he says, "I don't know how I'm a racist. I'm not the one who went after Muslims. I'm not the one who went after undocumented workers. My comment yesterday was not singularly directed to Mr. Trump. It's at the media. I'm sick and tired of being sick and tired of watching us cover this campaign without calling him on the carpet. It says something about America that he is resonating in the way that he is, and I can't get in the minds of the voters. I just hope that at some point we will come to our senses and that we will see that this is how these slippery slopes begin." If you want to listen to the Tavis Smiley radio show, you can get it anytime, iTunes Music Store, no cost, free. All the iTunes podcasts I've mentioned this hour are free. iTunes is a free download to your Mac or PC, and you can listen anytime. And sure, boy, Tavis and his guests, often they're controversial, more so than Democracy Now! Some people think Democracy Now! Is too controversial. Well, Tavis Show is more so. It'll get you thinking. You don't have to agree, but you need to think. And you need to act, whether you're African American or white. And I hope you get a chance to listen to that at your leisure, and maybe read Tavis Smiley's new book somewhere. Hopefully you don't have to buy it. This is not an ad to buy it. Go to your public library. There's an idea. I understand public libraries in your hometown have books for free. Yeah. It's radical. Yeah, you can go there, you can read the book there, or you can take it home with you for a week or two, as long as you bring it back. So try it. You might like it. Okay, we're moving on with other stories here, finishing up the last 7 or 8 minutes of the new WHFR Journal. Oh, let's see. Opinions. All right. Bernie Sanders for president. I just noticed that The Nation magazine, which is the oldest continuously published magazine in the United States of America since 1850s, they've endorsed Bernie Sanders for president. Okay? And here's a commentary about the Michigan primary coming up March 8th. How important that primary could actually be. Take a listen.
This has been an intense first week of the year in Michigan politics, with Governor Snyder signing deeply controversial bills, the Flint water crisis, and renewed concern over the impending financial collapse of the Detroit public schools. For now, this is almost blotted out concern over the fast-approaching presidential primary season, after months in which it seemed like the news was all Trump, all the time. Well, think about it or not, Michigan's presidential primary is exactly 2 months from today. And there's reason to believe the primary might be considerably more important this time than in the past. For one thing, both parties are using it to select their national convention delegates. That's only happened once in the last quarter century. Instead, Republicans have mainly used a primary, and Democrats a variety of complicated caucus systems. Few voters took part, and fewer understood how they worked. This had the additional bad feature of allowing Democrats to vote in the Republican primary if they so chose. Republicans resented this. Michigan's primary results have often been embarrassing or bizarre. Michigan primary voters chose Henry Ford in the first ever Michigan primary exactly a century ago, even though he wasn't running for anything. Democrats were embarrassed badly in 1972 when George Wallace won their Michigan primary with a tremendous landslide and the biggest ever turnout. 8 years ago, the state violated both parties' rules by scheduling a January primary, partly because then-Governor Granholm thought this would give her an in, and maybe a job, with Hillary Clinton, who she was convinced would be the nominee. She was wrong. Even though John McCain was going on to win the nomination that year, Michigan Republican voters chose a candidate who dropped out of that year's race in a few weeks. As for Democrats, they managed to leave one name off the primary ballot, Barack Obama. The state should do better this year. Though we vote after the traditionally early states like New Hampshire, our primary comes before most other big states like Ohio, Illinois, New York, and California vote. Every conceivable candidate's name will be on our ballot, including one Rocky De La Fuente, a California car dealer who became the first presidential primary candidate ever to get on by collecting signatures. The one safe prediction is that some of the dozen GOP candidates on their side of the ballot will have dropped out before we vote. Actually, at least two already have, Lindsey Graham and George Pataki. Once voting starts in other early states, candidates who fail to score will quickly see their donations dry up. Nobody wants to give money to a loser, and that will effectively end their campaigns. Michigan's actually been decisive in choosing a nominee a couple of times. President Gerald Ford was in grave danger of losing the nomination to Ronald Reagan 40 years ago, but scored a huge victory in his home state and started his comeback. In 1992, both President Bush the First and Bill Clinton helped cement their nominations with big victories here. Well, maybe we'll do it again this time. And you may as well plan on voting. You are, after all, paying for it. The primary cost the taxpayers $10 million. May the best candidates for Michigan win.
Yeah, I misspoke. I wanted to play that and mention to you so that you do vote on March 8th in Michigan. If you're not registered, there's time to register. Oh, my goodness. So you can make a difference here. Because I misspoke last time. I said the Democrats, and this has been true in the past, it didn't matter how you voted. They would still decide in their own caucus or conventions who the delegates would be for at the Democratic National Convention. Well, that's not true, apparently, from what Jack said and also from what I've read elsewhere now. Both the Democratic primary and the Republican primary that you'll vote in, and you can choose if you're an independent, you can vote for in one or the other. Doesn't matter. You don't have to be card-carrying one in one party or the other, or how you voted in the last election doesn't matter. But you choose. And now that it really matters, that it will designate delegates for the National Democratic and Republican conventions, you should go, choose one party or the other, vote for the candidate you want to win the most, to be the next president. I think that's what you should do. There was an awful lot before when it really didn't matter much how you voted. It was like a cosmetic thing, just a publicity thing. But this time it will make a difference. Even if you're an independent and you don't want to vote for Democrats or Republicans because you know there's other parties out there that you might want to vote for president as soon as their candidates are known. But I was wrong. So this will eliminate now, I think, Democrats wanting to go over and vote for the worst Republican. You see what I'm saying? In other words, you vote for the negative, as if you're going to make a difference that way. I've never been in favor of that kind of voting, but of course, in America, you've got that right. You could still do it that way. But now, the Democratic presidential candidate will partially be decided by how many delegates they get here in Michigan. So you can make the difference. And of course, I think, well, there's going to be a lot more people on the ballot than who will have active campaigns by March 8th. Several of them, including, I think, Martin O'Malley probably, will drop out of active campaigning because they don't have money anymore. So on the Democratic side in Michigan, it'll be, of course, Hillary Clinton and also Bernie Sanders, who is now leading the polls and getting endorsements right and left from an awful lot of people. And he's got more people, literally, behind him, working for him, donating for him, not big money because he won't take it, than Hillary. So interesting contest there. Republican side, do I have to say? Oh, my goodness. Well, look at the choices. There's going to be, I think, about 12 different Republicans still on the ballot there, but you need to choose because it's going to assign delegates, at least for the first ballot, as they call it, at the Republican National Convention. So definitely, March 8th, if you're not registered to vote, but you qualify to vote in Michigan, go sign up at your city clerk or your county clerk's office or your township office or whatever you have, and do that by February 8th, a month of before, okay? And then make a point to go vote. Now, there is absentee ballots still in Michigan. You have to be either old or got to verify you're not going to be in town or you're sick or something, but you can get a ballot in advance, too, if you want to vote that way in Michigan. An important thing to do, and we're going to have to leave you now here on the Journal. So much, so many stories, so little time, but you need to keep up your civic activism out there, folks. Hope I've challenged you a little bit this hour. Come on back next Friday for our auto show, and which is always fun for me, a car guy that I am. And but take care and keep in touch, and you know, any comments about the show, you can send an email to whfr@hfcc.edu and put something about the Journal in the subject heading there, so it will get to me. Glad to read that, and if I've said something misspoken somehow, I want to correct that. Well, it's 2 o'clock, and we're going to go out with just a few seconds as Highway 61 comes up of David Bowie, since he passed away on January 10th. Because one thing about the show, we're always talking about the changes. Take care out there.
Still don't know what I was waiting for, and my time was running wild in me. Dead-end streets, and every time I thought I got it made, it seemed the taste was not so sweet. So I turned myself to face me.